Inside the Cross Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside the Cross Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and we are back after a two-year hiatus, at least this triumvirate. I believe I'm with Matt Kinnear and Christian Sweezy, that you guys did this without me last year.
We did. We weren't around enough in the fall, so we had to take it in our own hands.
Unbelievable. Well, it'll be a good podcast we have in store for you. This is the beginning of a three-part series recapping fall and previewing the 2016 season. As has been the case, this is meant to accompany you on the long drive home for Thanksgiving break or any other types of holiday travel time. And I'm here to facilitate, play a little bit of point guard, as Sweezy, who has spoken with the top 25 coaches in addition
Correct.
To a lot of different appearances at fall events. And then Matt, once again, making his, at this point, third annual road trip.
Third annual trek through Division I lacrosse. Went to Boston last year. This year did a little trek through upstate and central New York. So fired up to get on the road and see all these teams.
And we're happy to have you guys here listening to the podcast. We are going to do this in three parts, like I said, and we're going to break it down by conference. So in this original outlay, we will do the ACC, America East, and Big East, and then we will do the next three conferences in alphabetical order. We are writers, after all, and then we'll wrap it up with the final four conferences to end this three-part series. So let's dive right in.
Final four, we don't want to get in trouble with the NCAA. We're not talking about final four.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, we could definitely there's spots for confusion there. But we are coming out with a bang. Let's talk about the ACC. It comes first in the alphabetical order, and in its second season with five teams, it will have an automatic qualifier in 2016, and unless they add a sixth team, this will be the final year that is the case. And I guess, Sweezy, let's start with Notre Dame. You know, they made a really strong case at the end of last season to be the preseason number one team heading into this year. You know, they and Denver neck and neck, and you had an opportunity to spend a fair amount of quality time with Notre Dame over the fall. What were your impressions?
Obviously, they're very good at sort of each spot. They have a returning first-team All-American on attack, midfield, defense. You know, there are obviously little kind of tiny holes to fill here and there, but I was very impressed with them. They can do everything. They can dodge. They can shoot from the outside. They can finish from the inside. They obviously play very good defense. You know, I think face-offs might be a little bit of a question. And in goal, they have plenty of candidates. I had forgotten until I did the face-off yearbook write-up that they have two goalies on their roster who have played in a Final Four. So, I mean, not many teams have even one who can say that. And I'm not even sure if those two will wind up being a starter. I was very impressed with Owen Malloy in the fall. He's a redshirt freshman from New Jersey who started the scrimmage I saw against Navy on top of the other two guys who are returning. He's seen, of the three, you know, obviously Notre Dame has goalies. They take away what they take away and they give up what they give up. Malloy seemed like the one who could really maybe make a game-saving change. A big save in a tight game. The other two guys, I think, are good. You know what you're going to get out of them. Malloy seems to me to have a pretty good upside.
Yeah. My thing for Notre Dame heading into this season, you know, I think it starts with exactly how much was Matt Kavanaugh hampered by injury at the end of last season, and how much can his double labrum issue be improved? You know, if he is the dynamic trigger man that he has been at certain points over the course of his career, then it kind of doesn't even matter who the third attackman is, which is probably their biggest question mark heading into the season. As you know, Ryder Garnsey looks like the primary candidate, but Eddie Lubowicki was another guy who had a nice kind of fall and put himself into that contention. But if Kavanaugh is who he has been, as opposed to just being the guy that is so clutch and so key at the end of games, which is what he was kind of in the second half of the year, really good for Notre Dame, but not at the danger level that he was. I mean, they're going to be an incredibly potent offense to go with their always consistent defense.
And one of the opposing coaches brought this up, actually, that Garnsey is a lefty, Kavanaugh is a lefty, and, you know, do you want two lefties in that starting lineup? I was impressed by Lubowicki. I was impressed by a lot of their middies, too, in terms of where they can kind of get defenses moving or initiate their offense from. But I'm curious to see. The one thing about Notre Dame, I always thought Kavanaugh was the heartbeat of that team, and especially of the offense with his riding and his ground balls and his hustle. I was amazed at how hard those guys hustled. They out-hustled Navy, and that's saying something. You know, in the scrimmage I saw, Garnsey was everywhere. Lubowicki was everywhere in the riding game, and you know, they really ragged a couple goals back off failed clears. Navy had a lot of problems clearing the ball against Notre Dame. So Kavanaugh, even when he's not out there, you know, don't expect a drop-off, at least hustle-wise. I was very impressed by that.
Matt, if Notre Dame is kind of the sure thing, it's able to be said that each of the other four teams have a fair amount of question marks, which is relatively uncommon situation for Duke and Syracuse recently to have been in. What is the thing that you're kind of looking to around the rest of the ACC as being the thing that you're most curious to see how it plays out?
You know, I'm most curious about Virginia, actually, when you kind of skipping over Duke and Syracuse. What's been going on at Virginia, and is this the year that they kind of bounce back from some kind of disappointments? That Hopkins loss at the end of the year last year was just out of character and kind of a depressing loss for them. But this year, you know, with kind of the shoring up the defense and the injuries, you know, they're kind of this team that you don't really hear much about this fall, but now I think they're poised for a breakthrough year. But otherwise, you know, Syracuse, what is their offense going to look like? Christian, you saw their offense, and you probably have the best outlook on them. But, you know, it's tough to kind of who fills in these holes, but you know at Syracuse they're going to have a way. What have you seen so far in their offense?
Well, I was pointing at you because I agree. You know, I was talking to someone who knows Syracuse a lot better than I do, I must admit. And at the scrimmage, I saw a Syracuse scrimmage, Navy and Towson. And he said he's expecting a lot of those 9-8, 10-9 type games from Syracuse because their defense is going to be very, very improved. I think Warren Hill and goal had a terrific fall. I had him. I was charting the scrimmage against Navy. He started the scrimmage against Navy and had 15 saves and gave up one goal. And you know, and even the goal he gave up late in the third quarter, Hanchy from Navy threw like three stick fakes. Warren Hill was on the ground and he was still kind of, you know, it was almost like trying to kill the vampire. Like, got to make sure he drive the stake through his heart just to get one goal. So I was very impressed with their defense. Nick Mellon, a freshman from West Genesee, was the third starter and looked exactly what they needed. You know, he's not going to throw a lot of crazy checks, though I guess he may have spent a little bit of time in the penalty box in high school. But I think that he is going to be very, very good for that defense. But the offense, you know, I don't see a ton of speed. Nick Weston, a redshirt freshman from upstate New York, caught my eye as being pretty quick. But the other quick guys they have, I don't know how skilled they are offensively, and I don't know how much they'll be in that top six or top nine conversation, the more kind of face-off wings or defense-to-offense type guys. So I'm curious to see how their offense really looks.
And Kevin Rice was just, you know, such a player that could play so well at the ball and do so many things that, you know, there's going to be some issues there in terms of building the chemistry earlier in the season. And they open up the season this year with Albany coming to the Dome. So that's quite a way to start the early part of your season there.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by Syracuse as well. I want to come back to your point about Virginia, but just, you know, kind of sticking with the Orange, the thing that I'm most fascinated by is if they're going to, you know, win 9-8 and 10-9 games, you know, does that mean Dylan Donahue's accounting for 6 or 7 points? And
I think
if
he
that's
will.
The case, yeah, I mean,
I think he will.
What's remarkable to me about that is that I think that Kevin Rice suffered from this a little bit as well. Because they're not incredibly physically imposing, and because, you know, they are surrounded by so much talent, or at least in Rice's case, that was the case. I feel like they, as individual playmakers, don't get the credit that they necessarily deserve. And I know that I'm party to that. I don't give them enough credit, and I think this could be a year because of how much water Dylan Donahue is going to have to carry early in the season when that gets rectified a little bit. And I think that he's capable of it. He is more physically imposing.
No
he's
question.
Taller. I think he's filled out a little bit more. He's a lefty.
It's
going to be an interesting kind of dynamic to see how that develops. And then, you know, Jordan Evans is another one. Is he, you know, we've heard a couple of times people say things like the injuries have just got caught up to him and he's not at that level athletically that he was expected or projected to be coming out of high school. Well, I mean, we were at the Albany game where he made an incredible turning jump shot. You know, if that's something that becomes more consistent, you know, even if he isn't necessarily the catalyst to the offense, it could be really important for just providing a top six that keeps defenses on its heels, makes the opposing defensive coordinators concerned about preparing for Syracuse.
And one of the things we talk about in the Faceoff yearbook as well is Paroli, the transfer from Brown, who, and I was talking to the Brown coaches and some of the coaches who faced Brown last year, he's an incredible invert middie. Last year he would go like 80% of the time, he would come in the game, go right behind the cage. He's a big kid, I think he's like 6'3", 6'4". He's from Carthage, he's from somewhere upstate. And I think that, yeah, I think he finished with 24 assists last year for Brown. I think he was 10 goals and 24 assists. So he clearly... And he didn't play in the fall. He was out with an upper body injury. He's enrolled in at Syracuse as a fifth-year senior, a grad student. So I think he might give them something that we didn't see in the fall. He might give them an element. And I don't know if he'll play attack or midfield. I suspect he could do either or. And that's the other thing. Evans could play attack and midfield. Mariano at UMass, the UMass transfer, can play both. You know, I think they have a lot of versatility there.
Well, and certainly Nicky Galasso painted the portrait of how an invert attackman can run out of the box and create some havoc for Syracuse. But, you know, what's interesting to me is when you look at it from a league perspective, is that while Syracuse might be graduating more in the way of volume, how do they compare to Carolina's offense, who in Bitter and Sankey, you know, didn't necessarily lose the, you know, 5, 6, 7 offensive contributors, but certainly lost a tremendous amount just in those two guys.
I was talking to an opposing coach, and I was surprised when he said this. I thought, oh, Carolina might be in trouble, Sankey and Bitter. And he said, well, those guys played a lot, but they were kind of predictable by the end, too. You know, it was hard to defend them. Obviously, they are where they are on the UNC all-time scoring list for a reason. But you could kind of, you know, you kind of knew what you were going to get in with them. The question is whether you could stop it. But there weren't a whole lot of surprises there. And this offense clearly is going to have some surprises because we have no idea what it's going to look like. But with Metzbauer as the offensive coordinator, I suspect it'll be something pretty good. And it was interesting at the end of their season last year, that quarterfinal loss to Maryland, I was on the field for it, and I saw Metzbauer go right up to Pontrello, who's now going to quarterback the team, put his arms around him, you know, looked him right in the eye and said something. I don't know what he said, but I assume it was, this is your team next year. And all of a sudden now he's the quarterback and he seems to be the guy who's going to carry a lot of the load on the offense. So I'm curious to see how that goes. I have talked to a high school coach in the D.C. area who said that Pontrello is the best high school player he ever saw.
Yeah.
And this guy coached for 25 years in the D.C. area and saw some pretty good players.
My thing is, if you're looking for a relatively unexpected 50-point guy from Carolina's offense, it's going to be Shane Simpson. And I think that, you know, whether or not he can get to that level could be the biggest determining factor in whether or not Carolina is a top 4 team throughout the season or a top 10 team. It's amazing to me that we've gotten to this point of the podcast. We're about 11 minutes in. We haven't talked about the team that has won 3 national championships in the last 6 years.
And has the best player in college lacrosse right now in Miles Jones.
That's by design, though. I mean, Duke intentionally tries to keep it quiet in the fall.
Duke does this in the fall, and it seems to have worked. We've seen teams copycatting what John Donowski does. You know, more and more teams are kind of being, you know, playing less fall events, showing a little bit less of their hand in the fall. It's worked for them. You worry about yourself in the fall, and then you worry about other teams in the spring. But the thing that's going to be interesting to me is Miles Jones is a senior now. They're best players of the senior class. Having a senior class that are, you know, the leaders of the team, you know, presumably some of the captains of the team, who are the best players on the team, I think is going to make a real big difference for this Blue Devils team. You know, there's not going to be any lack of clarity about who's in charge in that locker room. And, you know, Miles Jones is capable of doing it. He's shown incredible leadership. Obviously, his game has developed so much over his career. And, you know, as a senior, you know, he'll put this team in a spot where they can compete for a national championship.
Yeah, I think that was a big subtext to the 2015 season that I think, you know, people outside of the program were aware of, but I don't necessarily know to what degree it got the attention that it required with respect to, you know, just not having the end of season that they would have liked is probably the best way of putting it. Certainly losing in the first round at home to Ohio State, you know, and snapping a Final Four streak. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mentioned I wanted to come back to Virginia. One of the things that was so interesting to me, a parallel storyline that I followed last season, was the similar way in which Maryland and Virginia were dealt adversity, turmoil, whether of their own volition or via injury, and how their courses were going to be charted differently over the course of the season. And Maryland obviously made it to the national championship game. Virginia lost in the first round at home. I think that there's an argument to be made that the profile of player that was lost in Virginia in terms of volume was higher, so we can understand that. With Scales and Pinnell back, you hope that they're as close to 100% as possible. And then a few guys who emerged, particularly at the defensive end last year, you know, as stars, Muggle Howard being probably the most substantial, a 6'5", 220-pound long stick who maybe more than anybody else is capable of bodying up with Sergio Pergovic and Miles Jones in that league. And then, you know, 2 freshman starters in Scott Hooper and Logan Greco. You know, I think that this could be a Virginia team that really has the ability to lock opposing offenses down.
I agree, and it was interesting. Their fall is exactly what Duke usually does. Mm-hmm. And when I asked Tom Starja, it was not because they're trying to emulate Duke. I don't think anyone at Virginia would ever, even if it were true, I don't think they would acknowledge it. But apparently he just thought they were sort of banged up and had a lot of guys coming back from injury, and I don't think he wanted to rush things on some of those rehabs and things like that. So they had a very quiet fall. But, you know, there's a lot of questions about that team. Look, they haven't won a quarterfinal since 2011, I think, mm-hmm. right? Because 12 they lost they've lost in the first round or not made the tournament since then. So it's a big year for Virginia. I do happen to think they'll be pretty good. I think they're certainly at least a dark horse to get back to championship weekend, not the Final Four. We call it championship weekend. But I'm curious to see kind of how they do, because, again, we have nothing to base it on, given that they were very quiet in the fall and did not participate in any events.
My sneaky under-the-radar pick player-wise for them is Mugged Mario, who I think is going to be the third attackman alongside Lukovic and Pennell. He's a finisher. He's a goal scorer. And I don't necessarily think he's got – he's not Chris Backlund, but he's not that far off.
He's a lefty?
Yep. Yeah, he's a little thinner, but he's creative. He obviously had a situation last spring that's going to be difficult for lacrosse fans to forget until he starts pouring in goals, but we'll see how that shakes out.
And I know they like Emery, the young middie, too. I think they've been very impressed with the freshman Lamb from Paul VI. I think Ryan Lamb is his first name, a big physical dodger. So they got horses.
They've got tons of versatility, particularly a lot of guys that can play offensive defense in the midfield, which you start to emerge at the end of last season. Obviously graduating Tyler German impacts that a little bit, but there are four or five guys right behind him. And, you know, we'd be remiss to talk about Virginia without bringing up the number one recruit in the country. All reports out of Virginia this fall were that Ryan Conrad is the real deal. The hype that was surrounding him was justified in his on-field performances.
You saw him in the Under Armour game, what he could do there. You know, that's obviously not the end-all be-all, but, you know, nationally he's going to be well-known now because of that performance. So he just has to bring it this spring.
I have a former lacrosse All-American who I'm very fortunate to talk with. He knows the game inside and out. And he collared me 4 years ago. I remember exactly when it was. And he said, I hate talking about freshmen. I hate early recruiting. But Loyola High School has a freshman midfielder who was unbelievable. And it was Ryan Conrad. So I suspect he will be quite good.
Well, let's move on to the America East, a league that has about as much turmoil as the league has ever had. When you consider that Lyle Thompson and Mike Rooney, 200-point scorers who led the two America East Championship game participants, are no longer in their respective teams. And certainly it's always tough to see generational talents like Lyle Thompson move on. But certainly creates a little bit of a power vacuum in the America East. My main question is, if those two are the favorites, Albany and Stony Brook, is there a team that could be a dark horse? Is this a year that the America East automatic qualifier gets stolen, for lack of a better term?
Vermont could be that team.
I was going to say them, too. I saw them last year against Georgetown. They're very funky on offense. They have McKay, a very nice lefty shooter. You know, they've got wing dodgers. They've got some pretty nice shooters. They're very good on extra man. And they play some different stuff. You know, they go 5-on-5 a lot with holding someone back at midfield. They look for transition. And they're well coached. Curtis is a very good coach, so I'm curious to see how they look this year.
Yeah, they were so young last year. They got a lot of guys who got significant minutes, you know, as freshmen, sophomores. They're going to be a year older. They've got the talent. You know, it's kind of this league has all these Canadians in it, and certainly Vermont is up there among all the teams in the league in terms of these talented Canadians that they have. You have Cam Milligan in attack. They're going to be a team that maybe they're not as good as Albany, but they're going to give Albany a game, and it only takes one game in the conference tournament to steal a bid.
And I think that, you know, ultimately, when you kind of look up and down the league, the America East was similar to the CAA in the sense that I think in a five-year span, four different teams won the automatic qualifier. Hartford got it 1 year and played Cornell in the first round. And obviously UMBC had a run in the late 2000s that set the standard for the conference during that period of time. But I think that, Vermont has been a team that has had a couple of fits and starts under Ryan Curtis and has had some decent talent, and it would be exciting for the league if they were able to put it all together this year. That being said, you know, obviously behind a very talented senior class for the Great Danes was a lot of talent in and of itself. John Maloney is a middie. Kyle McClancy is a middie slash attackman who a lot of folks have been raving about. Certainly Stone Sims, a defenseman, and Blaze Reardon, a goaltender. I mean, this is just, it's a really talented group, but the guy that I'm most interested in is Connor Fields, because he was, I don't want to say relegated to a finisher's role, but he put up 66 goals and 22 assists last season, and he just strikes me as the type of player that's capable of a lot more than catching and shooting, and I think that this is a year that we see it. It's tough to see guys make that transition from goal scorer to quarterback, and I don't know that he's going to be a pure quarterback in that sense, but I am very fascinated to see what Albany looks like with a sophomore of his caliber running the show.
I'm very excited to see Adam Osika. He's a sophomore, junior, midi from Ohio. Mm-hmm. 6'4", 210, 215. When I was talking to Scott Maher for the Face Off Yearbook interview, and we were kind of going through the team, Osika's name came up a lot. You know, good shooter, good dodger, can play defense, can kind of do a little bit of everything, and hasn't had to play a ton to date in his career. I think he's someone to keep an eye on.
The thing about Albany that's really, you know, it's stupid to say that graduating Lyle Thompson is not going to be a big deal, because it is. He's the best player that we've seen in college lacrosse, you know, in the past few years here, and obviously he's the leading point scorer of all time. But it's going to be a really good team either way. They have the horses. They have a great attack, just as you mentioned. But the thing is, they've been beating teams so badly the past few years that they've been getting a lot of guys out there on the field. You know, their midfielders, they've been running so many guys that the juniors and sophomores from last year are now a year older, and they've actually played significant minutes. You know, granted, it's minutes late in games against teams that they're beating up on, but, you know, they still get minutes in a college game, and that's an important thing.
Do you have any thoughts on UMBC, Binghamton, or even upstart UMass Lowell? I mean, you know, from my perspective, you know, this is a UMBC team that has been below program standards for the last couple of seasons. You know, obviously the transfer of Pat Young for his senior year was disappointing, because Young is the type of player that looks like he's going to be able to contribute early at Maryland. But at the same time, you know, they have a couple of interesting players, is probably the best way to put it. Max Maxwell leading that list in terms of being a versatile offensive talent. You know, it just seems like they've been a program who, particularly as it relates to wins against, in the last couple of years, Stony Brook and Albany, just haven't quite had enough. And I'm not certain. I don't think that this is going to be the year that trend changes.
I don't think so. The thing that they're going to have, you know, kind of on their side is they got a lot of big defensemen. Zach Esser is a great leader out there on defense as well. And an offensive player you didn't mention is Nate Lunas. You know, he's another talent as well. So, you know, they're going to play two ways. They're going to play their midfielders on offense and defense. And, you know, maybe they'll surprise the team. But I think right now you have Albany, Stony Brook, with Vermont kind of peeking in there, and then UMBC is below that, and potentially Harvard as well.
I saw UMBC against Cornell at the George Boyardi event at Landon School, and Lunas caught my eye. You know, very shifty, very good shooter, and also a good feeder, can do a lot from the wings. One of the opposing coaches, when I asked about UMBC, and he said they're always going to be good on their fundamentals. Zimmerman, you know, crushes the fundamentals, doing everything the right way. So at the very least, you have a pretty good foundation from which to build. Esser caught my eye last year when I saw them. I didn't notice him as much this fall. But I'm curious to see how they do. And I love the Stony Brook D-middies, Jeff Ray in mm-hmm. particular. You know, they ask a lot of those guys. And I think for people who like defensive midfielders, as I do, or short-speak D-middies in particular, Stony Brook's a very fun team to watch.
Excellent. Well, let's move on to the final conference in our first of our three-part conference. We're talking about the Big East. And my observation of the Big East is this. Heading into last season, I had relatively similar points of view on the stranglehold that Loyola had over the Patriot League after going undefeated in their inaugural trip through the conference. And Denver, who, I guess the easiest way to put it, is a little bit out of place in the Big East in terms of, you know, the assets and the advantages that program had heading, you know, in comparison to, you know, its peers and rivals in the Big East. I will say that with what we saw out of Marquette, Georgetown, and Villanova in particular last season, that aggregate gap seems a lot more narrow. So even though Denver is as good as they were last year, I think those other three teams in particular, you know, not to sell St. John's and Providence short, but I think that those three teams, Marquette, Villanova, and Georgetown, are going to be in a position where I kind of would be surprised if Denver went undefeated in the Big East regular season this year.
I would too, and even with Villanova and Georgetown in particular, I know there's a lot of excitement about some facilities that are either on their way or might even be there already for both programs, locker rooms and stadiums and things like that. Georgetown, I think, has some bigger of the two, but they had the bigger need of the two as well. Villanova Stadium is awesome.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of ancillary stuff going on with those programs, but their recruiting is hit. You know, I got to see Georgetown in an inter-squad scrimmage, and they are athletic. They have so many athletic middies. I was very impressed by them, and they're very young. I think they only have five seniors on the team, and I think only a couple. I think Corey Park and Joe Bucci are the two who are really going to play a lot. You know, the others are sort of complementary players. So they have their team coming back this year and next year. Pete Conley, I was reminded of this when I saw Georgetown in their scrimmage. Pete Conley, the midfielder, I think scored 17 goals and had like 15 of them in a three-game stretch. Got hurt against Duke, was out for the year, but they were leading Duke when Conley went out of that game in the third quarter. So Georgetown's pretty good, and I think Villanova, Ficarro, transferring from Princeton, his brother joining there. You know, they have a lot of guys coming back from their knee injuries. John Clue is back from a knee injury. Devin McNamara is back from another injury. So they, you know, these are different teams from what people are used to seeing.
Yeah, with Villanova, you know, you have to kind of look at their last year where, you know, first game of the year against Johns Hopkins, that was a close game that they had. You know, they had a faceoff guy go down, and, you know, they ended up kind of the fourth quarter, it got away from them in the snow there up in Pennsylvania. But their offense is really, really, really good. Jake Fracaro is an instant injection of just that presence of a hard-nosed guy who does everything that they need. You know, it's a very, I don't want to say a finesse offense, but, you know, it's an offense that, you know, it's very slippery is probably the correct word to use. And Jake just kind of has this mentality of just like, he gets the ball off of wings, you know, he can do face-offs as well, and he's just a kind of a hard-nosed guy who can go to the net and shoot, and he's really going to make a lot of things happen. You know, the thing that's going to be key for them with their offense is I think they're going to beat a lot of teams really, you know, really cleanly on kind of their first dodge and kind of their first time around. And, you know, I think they're going to want to hold on to the ball a little bit more and kind of make sure that they get the, you know, the no-brainer shot as opposed to taking the one that comes first. But really what I think it all comes down to is face-offs, and you're not going to beat Trevor Baptiste. All the teams are trying to beat Trevor Baptiste, but is there really anyone who can take him? I don't think there is.
And that's my problem with Georgetown. I'm not sure. You know, they had the two guys last year, Heaton, who was a senior, and the young man who transferred from Harvard, whose name I've just forgotten at the moment.
Mandola.
Thank you, Gabe Mandola. Villanova's face-offs, I think at least they have options. You know, Ficarro can take face-offs. They have some other guys coming back. I'm very curious to see Marquette. We talk about short stick D middies, and that is an emphasis for Joe Amplo and his program. They're always good, you know, going back to his days at Hofstra when he was an assistant there. They're always good with short stick D middies. So I feel like each team in this conference kind of has something. And Denver, I still don't know who they have in goal. You know, they've graduated so many minutes over the past couple of years that, you know, I'm not even sure if they know who it will be yet. And I appreciate that they don't need to win games 5-4. You know, they're going to score a little bit so they can be a little bit dirty on that defensive end and get away with it. But I'm curious to see who takes that job and how much of a drop-off they get from not having Ryan LaPlante.
Well, my thing with that is not necessarily who takes it, but does whoever take it able to hold on to it? Or is the goalie question going to be something that lingers into March and April? There's no question that Trevor Baptiste, you talk about Georgetown having this team next year and the year after. Well, Trevor Baptiste has 3 years left as well. He's a boogeyman that the rest of the conference is going to have to figure out a way to deal with. Now, there's, you know, always going to be a lingering question when it comes to a freshman faceoff guy who took about 400 draws, and the question is his body going to hold up? Well, I've been next to Trevor Baptiste a lot, and I would say that of the guys who I have been next to, who do I like being able to hold up to that level of being? And I think that, you know, he would be at the top of the list. So,
and that's the thing that these coaches are game planning for. It's not, you know, can my one guy beat Trevor Baptiste? It's, can I cobble together enough guys who will last the whole game against him?
Right.
He's that powerful.
Well, and not only that, but it's also a modulation of expectations. Can I go from losing 18 of 19 last year to losing 13 of 20 this year? And if I can do that, do I give myself enough of a better chance to win that all of a sudden, you know, the fact that the Pioneers are so potent offensively, and that's just kind of one of the last things that I think we should touch on before we get out of here, and it's this Denver offense. There's a perception and a conception of what it is that I'd just like to talk to you guys about. So, you know, obviously from a efficiency standpoint, there's almost, I think, no misconception. You know, they're about the most efficient offense in all of Division I lacrosse. And really, you know, I think that if you were able to utilize these metrics going back a ways, I think that they would be near that level historically. There's an idea that they have so much firepower that they can throw at you. And I think that's true. They have a tremendous amount of offensive depth, but they really didn't go beyond 8 or 9 guys in terms of the number of guys that actually put up numbers. Even in garbage time, they had a lot of guys on their bench last year that a lot of folks are really still unfamiliar with. A couple guys that moved to defense. You know, I think it's Joe Reed, who was, you know, an unbelievable midfielder out of California, picked up a long pole and gave him a little bit of rope depth. My thought or my question is, You know, so we got, you presume that Bob Zien's going to have a little bit of a bounce back year. Even if he doesn't look like he did in 2014, he's going to be a little bit better. Cannizzaro is probably going to take a step forward because, you know, that sophomore to junior year, particularly the type of guy that puts up a Torton-like campaign for a national championship team, you got to imagine his confidence. I don't even know how to imagine it. And then obviously Zach Miller is just so, so good. But is there any, do you see any chink in the armor, or is this one of those things that's just going to get, it's going
to I think they have ready finishers. I think they have whatever they want. Coach Tierney, when I talk to him, said we can be quicker down there if we need to be. We can have, we have a Westberg, not clone, but if we want the big righty shooter, we have that. Brandon Bomberry is not the name Tierney gave me, but he's the name I've heard people who really know the sport, that would not appreciate my telling you who they are, so I'll keep them off the record. But Bomberry is the name I've heard a lot, and I think he might be the next guy to sort of really explode in that offense and be someone really fun to watch. But no, I think they can do whatever they want. If they want to be fast, they can be fast. If they want to have the big shooters on either side, they can do that. If they want to initiate from wherever, wing dodge, wherever they want. I think Pace is actually the other kid. I really like Tyler Pace, the midi who does, can face off wing, great shooter, great dodger. I think they have everything.
Yeah, there's no reason to expect drop-off. You know, it's championship weekend. You know, obviously not Final Four. It's championship weekend, a bust for them this year again.
I can't disagree. I mean, you know, it was a little bit of a rhetorical question. I do think that, you know, the guy that I'm most curious about, seeing what level of jump he can take, you know, Bomberry is... to me, he's a little bit more like a known quantity because it was... He just couldn't get on the field because of Berg. But he's a, you know, he's a lot like a right-handed Zach Miller. I mean, they're... You know, their friendship has, a lot has been made of that, and you can kind of imagine what he looks like because you've seen Zach Miller do it. So, like, there isn't as much of an unknown there, in my opinion, even though I haven't seen a ton of him on the field.
Before Denver even won the championship last year, during championship weekend, people in the press box were talking about, well, next year they have Bomberry going to take a step forward.
So he is I was one of those people, yes.
Yeah. No, my guy is Jeremy Boscher. He's the one that I really want to see. What is he capable of? Because with his stature and his skill set, you know, a little bit like Colin Wolfer in the sense that, like, just, you know, it's one of those guys, who is that? Because he's just so big, and he really didn't, you know, contribute that much as a freshman. I'm excited to see Denver play, and you know, there are going to be a few new guys in that top eight or nine, and who those guys are and how they end up shaking out is going to be potentially really scary for not only Big East opponents, but also NCAA tournament opponents as well. Well, that'll do it for part one of the Inside Lacrosse Fall Podcast. We appreciate you checking us out, and hopefully you can tune back in tomorrow for part two.
And hopefully you're through the security line in the airport if you're flying over Thanksgiving.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.